Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Friday edition, Outkick 360 across the Outkick Network. A big football weekend straight ahead alongside Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton as we broadcast from the 6th and Peabody Studios in downtown Nashville, Music City, with Yeehaw Brewery, an Old Smoky distillery located right behind the Music City Center. Chad and I about to head to Gainesville, Florida for tomorrow's Outkick the Tailgate Show, which starts at 9 a.m. Eastern on campus with the University of Florida as they take on Alabama. PK about to hit a flight to Seattle as the Titans take on the Seahawks, and we'll be back on Monday to recap it all. But a big preview coming up today as well. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
It is good to be here. It is good to be right on the verge of a football weekend as we both board planes after this, which is also very exciting for this show. Excited about Outkick the Tailgate tomorrow in Gainesville, my first trip to the Swamp. By the way, people have been asking where they can find us. Some Alabama fans, Florida fans going to the game. Best way to describe it is, I don't know the layout of the campus. We are behind the center field wall of the baseball stadium at Florida. It's right there. If you know where the baseball stadium is, you can find it. You can see it. We're right behind the center field wall. Looking forward to that broadcast tomorrow with Jill Savage. And Paul, I know you're looking forward to heading to the Pacific Northwest.
I cannot be found in Seattle. It's a very quick turnaround. I get in at like 9:30 Seattle time on Saturday night, and I'm out at like 6:30 a.m. on Monday. A trip like that, I generally like to get in at a reasonable time on Saturday, spend a little time. But the direct flight thing right now nationwide is not really good out of Nashville. And I'm not taking a long, long connection in order to get a couple hours in Seattle when I can fly direct in the evening. I like it, but not that much. I've been before, so.
Big football weekend, guys. Coming up, Bobby Carpenter will join us in about an hour and 15 minutes from now. We'll preview all things college football with Outkick's college football analyst, Bobby Carpenter. And then at 4 o'clock Central, 5 in the East, we talk with Brent Hubbs and Austin Price of VolQuest.com. Tennessee and Tennessee Tech will kick off tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. on ESPN+. But there are some things roster-wise to get to that won't involve what should be a very large blowout at Neyland Stadium. We'll get into those question marks, including quarterback. That's with Brent and Austin coming up in about 2 hours.
So Bobby Carpenter, who's going to join us later in the show, shout out to him. We talked about our weekend schedules. Bobby right now is in Las Vegas, where he did his morning show back in Columbus at like 4 a.m. From like 4 to 8 a.m. he was doing a radio show back in Columbus.
And it's hard to go to bed early the night before when you're in Las Vegas.
Well, he then had media responsibilities.
Did he stay up? We'll ask him.
Might just stay up.
He had some sort of walkthrough. He's got a high school game with Bishop Gorman tonight. He's got some sort of walkthrough media interview with them. And then he's going to be hopping back on during our show this afternoon. Just nonstop for Bobby Carpenter. We appreciate his dedication.
Yeah, that's very kind of him.
How about the game last night? Washington and New York. We nearly pulled off the parlay, and then Daniel Jones in the fourth quarter with about 3 minutes to go, he surpassed 236 yards passing, and we lost the parlay.
Yeah, some of our YouTube chatters told Chad that was going to happen, but
it is amazing. I want to talk about this game in a second, but it is amazing how accurate Vegas is, not just with the spreads, but with the over under yardage in passing.
Every line.
So they took the lead. New York took the lead with 4 minutes to play in the
game. Something like
that. He was at exactly 236, and the line was 236.5, and he went to the sideline at 236.
Well, I was debating on just going money line. I hate when it's like three and a half points. Yeah. Going money line Washington, and that we still wouldn't have won because he ended up going over. But I was thinking how close it would have been, that razor's edge of the passing yardage, had I gone that route.
Well, Chad asked as we were getting ready, you know, was it just a too bad football? I think it was a compelling game between two average football teams, but I'll take the compelling game. I mean, there were a lot of good throws made, a lot of good catches made, one bad drop made, but a very compelling football game between two teams who were making plays against each other. They might have been making plays against each other because they're not good teams, but that didn't make it any less of a game.
Taylor Heinicke is for real. He's a gamer. I don't know if you buy into that or not, but he is resilient when you watch him play. He had a very up and down performance overall, made some really tough throws, made some bad one as well. But I love post game where NFL Network and Michael Irvin and Steve Smith and others, they're peppering him with questions about, do you see yourself as the starter for the rest of the year? This is after one start, and he's only played twice for Washington. One was off the bench last year in the playoffs against Tampa. And his response was, yes. I mean, I love how he was just matter of fact, yeah, I no feel diplomat. Like I'm the starter for the rest of the year, no matter if Fitzpatrick's back or not in 8 weeks.
It's funny, too, that the NFL analyst community, which I obviously hear a disproportionate amount from during a football game, right? The people I follow on Twitter are very active during a Thursday night football game, say. So I'm disproportionately hearing that voice. But you know who they're overwhelmingly comparing him to during that game? Ryan Fitzpatrick. They see a lot of Ryan Fitzpatrick in him.
You know who I think of when it's not the style of play, it's just where he's at as a starter. I think of Gardner Minshew. But Minshew mania in Jacksonville.
Needs where to be more consistent.
He's keeping you in games. There's a fervor to it that's very intriguing. He's not top 15 quarterback level. It's not like you're seeing some guy that's going to ascend to the ranks. At least I don't. But I see someone that can win games and keep you consistent with Washington's defense and with an established run game. And with McLaurin and others who are stepping up to make some great catches. Who knows what this team's capable of in that division.
Not a calm level guy, right? He's going to bring you some fire and some heat. And people like that. I like it. He seems like a likable guy, and I like seeing him fired up.
I like the story. He's a great story. I like his demeanor. I watched a lot of his post-game press conference. Very likable guy. You root for someone like that. Washington's going nowhere with him at quarterback. I mean, I do not believe in Taylor Heinicke from what I saw last night.
Taylor.
Paul's put
I'm
that in my
it
head.
Contagious.
Taylor Heinicke, I'm not buying doing much this year for Washington other than treading water. And look, that's what an undrafted guy should do when placed in that spot. So I think that he's capable of doing that. He is not the long-term option at quarterback for anyone in this league.
Here's my other quarterback question out of this game. Hutt, I'll direct it at you because Chad and I had this conversation when you were out of the room when we were getting ready.
Yep.
When will I stop being surprised at Daniel Jones' running ability?
Maybe never if you're still surprised now.
I don't understand why when I see him glide the way he does, I'm like, wow, that guy can run. Like, he's really impressive.
I think for so many people, they're surprised by his running ability. They're always going to be surprised until he doesn't look like a junior senator from North Carolina. I mean, he just doesn't look like a guy who's going to be running fast, just his everything about it.
He looks a lot like Eli Manning with a helmet on.
Yes.
And Eli Manning didn't run anything like that. So that's a big part of it, I think, right?
Well,
the one that got called back a little bit.
Let's say the obvious truth. A white guy that looks like Eli Manning is not a guy you would expect to run the way Daniel Jones runs. Yeah, you expect him to run like a Manning. And I'm not talking about Cooper Manning before the injury, who was a great receiver. I'm talking about Peyton or Eli is how you would expect him to run.
I wonder if defenders look at him like that ever.
Well, they need to stop.
He's running by.
He's running right past them.
You know, Josh Allen is very mobile, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Daniel Jones wins a foot race, doesn't he? Josh Allen's maybe a...
Probably.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's close. I mean, Allen doesn't get enough credit for his maneuverability.
But Allen's thicker.
If you remember, it was last year, the year before, Daniel Jones had that long run, I think the one that he ended up tripping on over his own seat, that he was registered as the fastest guy or the second fastest guy in the league at that point.
Well, that's another thing.
Straightaway speed.
That's a popular
line. It was miles per hour he hit.
Line last night. Every time I see him in the open field, I'm waiting for him to trip. That he's never going to live that down.
What was going on with the turf monster last night in Washington?
No, Washington is notorious for this. Paul's ripped me in the past for this. It is unacceptable that the NFL has a turf that's that bad. It's like scheduling Miami's playing at home this week. It's like scheduling the Dolphins at home in September when you know it's hurricane season and these games are going to be delayed. They just got through bad weather in Miami going into this week. It's like clockwork. And every year, this time of year, going into the fall, the Washington turf is not up to par with NFL standards, period.
Daniel Snyder seems not to, or I should say Tanya Snyder now, right, since she runs the franchise, doesn't seem to care.
Well, they've never cared. The NFL doesn't care about that turf.
I mean, I care when I watch that game because
it's every home game.
It affected my enjoyment of the game where it feels like every third play either a defender or an offensive player was just slipping on nothing.
It reminds
me. Does it result in injuries the way the Giants Stadium was
doing? I don't think it did
last
night, but I mean, it resulted in a 15-yard gain being a 5-yard gain because a guy tries to make a cut and just falls down.
Imagine Jack Rabbit Jenkins on that turf.
Oh. He said yesterday he's got it down now. He'll go out earlier and figure out his footwear, which is really concerning to me that he didn't know to do that before the game.
How about the
Jack Rabbits are nimble, right?
Yeah.
Supposedly. Okay.
Maybe pick a new nickname. If you're going to name yourself something, you can't keep falling down and call yourself
Armadillo,
Jack Rabbit.
Armadillo Jenkins.
How about the touchdown catch last night that gave Washington the lead before they won the game on the field goal?
Adoree Jackson.
Adoree was
right
in great position. He was
position. We've seen that before.
He even tried to rake the football. It was just strong hands.
That was a great play and just a bad luck scenario for Adoree Jackson, who did pretty much everything right on that play.
Perfectly thrown ball.
Yeah, and just a great toe tap and everything. I mean, it's just NFL's off to a really good start.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Even on Thursday night, Paul, you mentioned, don't care about the level of teams as long as it's a great game. Normally, it can be a close game, like 24-21. This was, especially in the fourth quarter, this is a lot better than what I expected early on in the season.
3 out of 4 prime times, right? The Rams blew out the Bears.
Yes.
But the rest of them have been really high quality.
I haven't
games.
Seen the ratings today for last night's game for Thursday night, but the primetime games were all up except for Sunday night, which for whatever reason, and maybe it's because the networks want to start and end a season in the same venue. I don't get it, but that's what part of the excuse is. The Rams were the host team for Sunday night football because that will be the stadium where the Super Bowl is.
Yeah, let them host it. Just give them a better opponent. I mean, I don't understand why you're obsessed with the stadium, but if you're going to be obsessed with the stadium, just give them a better opponent.
Well, it's the same reason Vegas was Monday night. I mean, these new stadiums with fans
deserve spotlights. I get that. The Bears don't deserve spotlights.
Some big matchups this weekend across the league. Titans, Seahawks, one of them. We'll get into that. The Colts hosting the Rams. Colts going back-to-back at home. They could start 0-2 at home. And who knew? But there's Hard Knocks during the regular season now with Indy.
How do you get signed up for that?
We'll discuss this and much more. Coming up in about 35 minutes, Chad Withrow has his top 5 games of the college football weekend that you should pay attention to. And again, coming up in about an hour and a half, Bobby Carpenter from Outkick.com previews those college games and much more. It's all straight ahead on Outkick 360. You can follow us on Twitter at Outkick360. Your online activity is your business. Every device in your digital life should be secured with ExpressVPN. I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode? Let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use, how many times you clear your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why even when we're at home, we never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon or Comcast or AT&T. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. And ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites that you visit. It keeps your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data and it has the most powerful encryption available. It's a great offer, Paul, with this.
Yeah, go to expressvpn.com/outkick360. You get an extra 3 months free in your one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/outkick360.
ExpressVPN.com/outkick360. ExpressVPN.com/outkick360. Glad you're with us across the Outkick Network. That could be Florence, Alabama, Muscle Shoals, Huntsville, Knoxville, Tennessee, right here in Music City, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, of course, on the podcast. NFL weekend coming up includes Titans and Seahawks. We'll be previewing that game and much more. Another 0-1 team with a surprise, a bit of a surprise, Green Bay playing on Monday night against Detroit. No one's talking about the Packers rebounding from their 38-3 shellacking to New Orleans. If they were to start 0-2, that would be the shock of all offseason.
Well, they've got a very good situation. Of all these 0-1 teams who are supposed to be good, they draw the kind of opponent. Like the Titans, you'd like it if they were playing Jacksonville. This is the NFC equivalent of that. Green Bay comes off a terrible loss, and they get a pushover opponent. I'm not saying Detroit, you know, is automatic, but they're as close as you get in the NFC to automatic, right? A division rival who is generally beatable. The Colts don't get that with the very strong Rams team. The Titans don't get that with the tough trip to Seattle. This is the Packers are in the best situation of these teams.
No one expects Green Bay to repeat or even come close to repeating what we saw last week. It was the worst loss of Aaron Rodgers' career as a starting quarterback. And they did not move the sticks on third down. They did not convert a third down until the fourth quarter against New Orleans last week in Jacksonville.
Amazing.
That offense, number one offense last year.
I mean, look, Paul's right. This is more about the lack of opponent in Detroit than anything else, that we're not asking a bunch of questions about the Packers. But if Aaron Rodgers goes out and just looks bad again, I know Aaron Rodgers is going to want to say R-E-L-A-X, relax, but there's going to be a lot of people sounding alarms at that point. If he comes out and looks anywhere close to as bad as he did in week one, back-to-back weeks, and now against Detroit, suddenly people are going to be panicking.
Oh, absolutely. I expect him to
rebound.
And, you know, Armando talked yesterday that the concern there is their offensive line. They're waiting on a key injury to return. They didn't do enough to address it, on and on. But we do say, and it is true, quarterbacks make offensive lines to a great degree. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, can't fix it personnel-wise, but he can fix a lot of things timing-wise, getting rid of the ball-wise, et cetera. We'll see to what degree he does that against Detroit. And that's not a very attractive Monday night game in terms of what we expect in terms of score proximity.
The flip side equivalent of the surprise factor, if Green Bay were to start 0-2, would be the Philadelphia Eagles starting 2-0. Winning last week, maybe not that much of a surprise because they played Atlanta. They now host San Francisco. And if Jalen Hurts has the same type of performance he did last week, they'll beat San Fran.
What'd you say about San Francisco playing in the East? Isn't that a number?
No, that's Seattle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Seattle's 14-1 their last 15 games in the East Coast.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that once they start traveling.
Well, they did last week.
Yeah. Philadelphia, I can't imagine stacking wins there. I mean, you know, this week will be full of surprises again. You know, or there will be some scattered. I can't see Philadelphia building on that. And the Eagles fans are, you know, they're all about. They went from expecting the number one draft pick to expecting Super Bowl over the course of one game, courtesy of what, like you said, a bad team.
I will say, though, I went back and watched a good bit of that Philly-Atlanta game. Wanted to see Arthur Smith in his first game, but also to see what Philly was all about. Pretty good. I don't know that they're going to beat San Francisco this week, but Hutton's right in that if they do go in there and beat San Francisco at home, that is an enormous start to the season. Devontae Smith We know what he did at Alabama. He has a touchdown in that game. There's always that big surprise.
Oh, and they fed him the football.
There's always that big surprise, right? We're not expecting it, and a quarterback breaks out. A team, their defense is good. Mm-hmm. I think they've got a good baseline start with a good defense. If Hurts can look anything like that, I know it was Atlanta, but if he can look anything like that and they get DeVonta Smith going quickly like they did in game one, that's a team to watch in that division.
And nationally, that team's just been out of the conversation in the NFC East. They've been in the conversation for number one pick.
Yes.
Well, and again, I would take, if we're looking at that division, setting the Giants aside right now at 0-2, Washington with Taylor Heineke, I'm not buying in on that right now. Dallas offense, yes. Defense, no. If Philly can have a good offense paired with their really good defense, I would be fine taking them in that division.
I'm also paying attention to two other matchups in the AFC North. First, Pittsburgh and Vegas. I mentioned briefly during, I believe, McClain's segment, maybe Armando's segment this week.
It was Armando.
The 5 years where Roethlisberger has missed the postseason, they've been one game out, and all of those seasons have included a loss to the Oakland Raiders. So these early season matchup, but the conference matchups matter. And right now the Raiders have a game over the Ravens. Can they get another one over the Steelers? The Steelers can start 2-0 after a win against Buffalo. And then there's Cincinnati. Cincinnati won in overtime as time expired in that game last week. And they come back. Joe Mixon leads the NFL after 1 week with missed tackles, forced missed tackles. I believe he had 6 or 7 in week one. Joe Burrow is willing to stand in there and battle. They can spread it around. Their rookie, Ja'Marr Chase, believe it or not, can see the football and can catch. He showed us that in week one, despite what everyone was talking about in the preseason. If Cincinnati can go on the road and win at Soldier Field, they're good enough to beat Chicago. That sets up Pittsburgh-Cincinnati in week three. And that's an early season divisional matchup where you could have two 2-0 teams where no one was talking about Cincinnati, much like Philadelphia. Yep. The Bengals have positioned themselves, again, early, positioned themselves to jump out with an early lead because of the Ravens' overtime loss on Monday night.
I love forecasting the teams this early in the year that we were not talking anything about in the preseason that we may be talking about weeks 3 through 6.
It's kind of a fact or fiction week in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, are the Titans that bad? Probably not, but we'll find out. They're doing a lot of talking this week. They have a chance to back it up in Seattle. Indy, they lose at home. Can they turn around and actually beat a really good Rams team? At least a Rams team we think is really, really good with Matthew Stafford after they blew out the Bears at home on Monday night. Now the Rams travel on the road to Indy. It is a believe-it-or-not type weekend for a lot of these 0-1 teams and 1-0 teams for that matter.
I know this is relatively minor. I don't like this scheduling quirk. Oakland opens with two AFC North teams. Titans and Indy both open with two NFC West teams. Just mix it up better.
I mean, they go... it's easy to say that. How many versions of a schedule do they try to figure out? Like 700? 700 million?
In 700 million schedule permutations, there
isn't
one
the best.
Where the Colts don't open with back-to-back NFC
games? I don't know. I mean, it's a great question. Think about how bad these other schedules must have been.
I'd love to get
600
inside,
million of them.
I'd love to get inside the algorithm to see how this is the best option.
I understand that it's incredibly complicated, but I also think things like this, they just don't even
I will take back-to-back or even three straight matchups against another division or whatever it may be if you avoid that interdivision game that's 3 weeks apart.
Quick rematch.
If you can avoid those and you get – you know, the Titans playing two NFC West opponents in back-to-back weeks, or the Raiders playing two AFC North opponents, I'll take it.
And then that leads us to Sunday Night Football. We'll stay in the AFC North. Ravens Chiefs. Browns are also, they host the Texans. That's the game the Browns should win.
There's a funny fantasy storyline to the Ravens right now because Tyson Williams, who had a good first half, and then didn't touch the ball much in the second half. Who's the offensive coordinator in Baltimore? He said in a just super fantasy deflating comment, when they asked him about it, he just said flat out, he said, yeah, the days of a lead back here are over. We're going to rotate guys in and play everybody. And immediately, great fantasy players everywhere just went and adjusted
Greg
their
Roman.
Lineup. Greg Roman, sorry, we should have known that. Fantasy players everywhere just sold or dumped Ravens, right? And went to other teams that have a more dedicated RB1.
Well, it's hard to buy into the Ravens when they start the season with their fourth string guy.
Yeah, but the thing is, their fourth string guy was good in the first half. So
they lead the NFL in rushing.
They found a good guy. They're going away from their good guy.
It's also funny to hear.
We got to get to Le'Veon Bell.
Well, to hear Greg Roman say that, given that their star lead back is injured. Oh no, it's really a trend across the league that we're just going to play everyone equal snap. Like no. That's what happens when you're down to your fourth running back. You're going to spread it out more instead of giving. If you have Derrick Henry, for instance, he's going to get the bulk of the carries every single time. It's very team. It's exclusive to each team as to how you go about it.
Well, I don't know if he was saying it for the league or saying it for them, but it's definitely over for them.
Well, right now it's Latavius Murray. He's going to get the bulk of the carries, right?
Yep.
As a guy who drafted Tyson Williams, I hope it's Williams.
It's going to be Latavius Murray and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
In the bulk of the carries. Yeah.
So the Browns hosting the Texans. If the Browns were to start 0-2, everyone thinks, oh, the Browns are for real. You know, the Kansas City did Kansas City things in week one. If Houston goes on the road and starts 2-0, what are we doing spending our time previewing this league?
That one's not sustainable.
I would question the reality of everything. Are we in a room right now, or is this just some sort of matrix scenario where it's all an abstract vision of our mind? If Houston starts 2-0 and beats Cleveland, and Cleveland's 0-2, I mean that would just set the world spinning in a different direction.
I mean, Paul, you mentioned this last week on this a week ago today. You said, hey, there's a chance where Houston's 1-0 and the rest of the division is 0-1. Could we see that 2-0 and 0-2?
Yeah, I didn't go that far, but maybe. I had a dad.
John McClain comes out here and says, I told you guys are trying to win. This team's winning the Super Bowl this year.
A dad of one of Simon's best friends at the big middle school football game yesterday approached me at the end, and after he made the requisite Titans kicking joke about how the middle school kicker was available for the Titans, which everybody in the stadium was thinking after he nailed an extra point off the crossbar, he said, lock of the week, Denver -6 against the Jags. And it's now -5.5, I think. But he's right. I think as you get further and further with the Jags, if they play the way they've played, that number's going to be in double digits on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And until it is, you got to grab it. Chad picks up his phone and
look at him
and goes. I mean, that's the kind of game you got to bet $50 on.
Paul just inspired me to go to the FanDuel Sportsbook on my phone right now. I was like, 6? Okay. I haven't even looked at that game yet.
The good news for Jacksonville in some way. Jags fans can take solace in the fact that Trevor Lawrence is their best player on the roster. The bad news is that their rookie quarterback is their best player on their roster.
It's going to be a while.
It's going to be a long year. You know, there are bumps along the way, and he's going to play extremely well some of these games, and they'll end up getting, you know, I don't know, Paul, if you agree, 3 or 4 wins by the end of the year.
I mean, it's amazing that happens, though, with a team that drafts that high every year. That you don't. I mean, there's some talent on that team, but
they switch coaches every 3 years too.
Isn't that incredible though? That when you, I mean, you would think you consistently draft that high, you're going to look around and say, "Whoa, well, we got some good young pieces here." You know, there's some really talented players that. But you're right. It's Trevor Lawrence than everyone else.
Well, then they end up trading away their malcontents. You know, Jalen Ramsey's no longer there. Jalen Ramsey's a shutdown corner, one of the few true shutdown corners in the league. When you look at his stats against the best wide receivers in the league, man-to-man, it's incredible. Guys they've invested in aren't there anymore.
Ngakoue, right?
Who's that? Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
It's another one I can think of that's no longer in
Jacksonville. It's just a mess. It's going to take a while to clean it up, and you know, I don't have a lot of faith in
You're a firm believer in Urban Meyer, right?
He's going to be the guy. I'm a firm believer that he's not going to be the guy.
And they tried to give patience to Dave Caldwell. I mean, he had a long leash.
Time.
He survived much longer than we thought.
Well, so did Marone. I mean, they get patience to both of them.
You know, and then they survived Coughlin. which is unbelievable.
Yeah. And Coughlin, you know, is invested in that organization from the first time through, but he's not the right kind of guy. The new generation of how the NFL works doesn't have room for a Tom Coughlin.
So, Paul, your lock of the week is Denver. Is that home or away against Jacksonville?
I didn't even look. Chad, did you see?
That is in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I don't care.
So the Jags start at home this week, and they're 5.5-point underdogs.
I literally just bet on it.
I bet big. So I know. I bet big on it.
Crazy to think that the Jags are 5.5-point underdogs right now. The Tennessee Titans are 6.5-point underdogs at Seattle.
Crazy times.
Yeah.
And
something
the
doesn't
Texas
match
lead
up there.
AFC South.
This is one of those weeks where it just does. It's one of those games. Take the Titans out of it. Everyone's talking Seattle. Everyone is discussing how terrible and just putrid the Titans are. Something doesn't add
usually
up. Where
that game goes the
usually
other
it flips.
Direction.
Yeah.
But
Randy Bullock, the
three
hero.
Of us being close to it, it's hard. Like, that's a game I would never touch. I don't bet that.
No one's picking them, like, in parlays where you see FanDuel tweets. And everyone's staying away from that game.
I mean, I fully expect the Titans to play much better in this game. There's going to be a bounce back. There has to be a bounce back.
The way you've talked is they'll play much better, but they'll lose.
I still think they're going to lose a close game. I mean, I see them losing by a field goal.
They're doing a lot of chatting. And I don't know if that's good or bad. Again, they have a game to play. We'll find out. But after all the discussion this week about wake-up calls and needing to be, you know, refreshed and geared and focused and an outlook that's professional, for lack of a better term. And again, I'm paraphrasing all of their quotes into one. If they go and lose and fly, what are you thinking on the flight back after – needing a jolt?
Yeah, you've got some issues. They usually rebound well. They do. But
they,
again,
they play
this is a
well
terrible
as the underdog.
Draw. Terrible draw.
They play well with the chip on their shoulder. Arizona had that last week.
And you need some personal responses if you're the Tennessee Titans. From Lawan, from Julio Jones, from a replacement kicker, from Bowen and Downing, I think. There's some specific personal responses in addition to overall team
sure.
thing with the effort and the passion and the fire and all of that. If they come out flat in this game, not that they can't recover from it, but it'll really pose a lot of questions about how it's conceivable that they come out flat. And they're going to be following, like you said, Macklemore, which isn't a big deal to us, but it'll get the crowd in a frenzy at a very difficult place to play.
The loudest stadium in the league, if it's not that, it's Denver, right?
Yeah, no, it's the loudest.
Well, loudest, but I'm saying, like, according to Guinness.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but or Kansas City. It's one of the three. They have not been to a game in Seattle with fans in 18 months. That is going to be a crazy atmosphere.
Well, at least they don't have a bunch of kids in the lineup who can't handle it because their kids don't play.
Well, right. Yeah.
There's a silver lining for you.
A
lot of veterans going to be out there, not a lot of rookies.
I'm eager to see how this Titans locker room responds. I expect them. I'm with Chad. I expect them to play a ton better. We'll preview the specific matchups coming up a bit later in today's show. Did you see, by the way, Marcus Spears on ESPN NFL Live rip into the Titans defense?
I've not watched the video. I saw the quotes that were put around the video, but I have not seen the entire video.
He talked specifically about that play that I brought up with Shane Bowen mm-hmm. yesterday about the zero coverage and the zero blitz and the off coverage.
The thing
did
I
like that.
The thing I like about the show, it's a TV show that's made for radio.
Loose.
Very loose, yes. Where you can tell they set him up to just rip into what he watched defensively from the Titans. And by the way, imagine if the Titans didn't get a couple stops. The Titans actually, the defense kept them in the game, believe it or not. It wasn't much of a game, but you follow me here. Yeah. The offense did nothing.
Settle down a little bit.
If not for the defense, this would have been like a 59-0 type performance that we saw a decade ago. Hopefully not that
12
bad.
Year, but, 12 years ago. Because it was on Simon's birthday, which is coming up.
They set up Spears, and he says, the quote was, "I'm pissed off about this defense, y'all. Competence, bro. That defense was so undisciplined." And he went on to say, like, for a defense that was so bad a year ago to look as undisciplined as they were in week one is unacceptable. And he went into the play that you're talking about as an example of one of many from this game against Kyler Murray.
The most disturbing thing, really, the more I've thought about what Shane Bowen said about that play, is that Kevin Byard was where they want him. So they want Kevin Byard 8 yards off of DeAndre Hopkins in the slot as he catches the ball, which is a no-win situation, no matter how well Byard is playing. So conceptually, that's just a big problem. We need to get, and we will, especially if Byard has a hard time this weekend. Kevin Byard didn't turn into a bad player overnight.
No.
But this scheme has turned Kevin Byard.
He had an interception in this game.
Yeah. But still, he had other plays where he took some bad angles and stuff. This defense is not accommodating Kevin Byard. And if it keeps going this direction, we need to have an extensive conversation about that.
Well, I think last year, part of it, and I agree, we will have an extensive conversation if it deserves it. I think part of that, Paul, is the injuries that they had in the secondary and how they tried to overcompensate using him in certain ways where it took away some of his best assets.
They also played left-right last year at safety, which I don't understand. I don't know. He's not the player through last year and this one game, though he had the pick, that he was prior to that. And it's not like he's old enough to have hit some sort of wall or anything. We know what he's capable of. He hasn't been doing it for 18 games now, last year, the playoff game, and this game. That to me, is increasingly obviously on coaches, though he didn't play well.
Paul's headed to Seattle for Titans-Seahawks. Chad and I, we're about to head to Gainesville this evening. And we will see Alabama and Florida tomorrow. We will get into a game preview of the big SEC matchup where the Crimson Tide reload year after year after year after putting so many players into the NFL. It's crazy. Monday night, there was a play that involved like 6 or 7 former Alabama players on the field making blocks or making big plays or making a tackle. It's nuts to look around and see what they're accomplishing as a program under Nick Saban. We'll put that into perspective since 2010, what they've done at the NFL level and what they're about to do again. That's all straight ahead on Outkick 360. Outkick's college football contributor, Bobby Carpenter, joins us in 30 minutes. Outkick 360. We are live from the 6th and Peabody Studios with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Shout out to Dylan Taylor, Jonathan Moulton for making the show happen today. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Chad and I headed to Gainesville. Tomorrow morning, we will kick off Outkick the Tailgate. We are live at 9 a.m. Eastern from college campuses across the South, all college football season long with Outkick and Fox. Chad, we head to Gainesville tomorrow. The tailgate bus will be set up right behind center field of the baseball stadium, previewing Florida and Alabama. Looking forward to what's going to be a fun season and kicking it off with the number one team of the country.
Well, and kicking it off with what is the first true, legit, enormous SEC game. With all due respect to Kentucky and Missouri last week, which was a nice SEC Network, nice game. The big boys are playing now with Florida and Alabama. By the way, first visit for Alabama to the Swamp since 2011, which is a crime.
Wow.
Hutton, you want to go to the complete, 12-game SEC schedule, which would eliminate a lot of this. The SEC, though, does need to find a way to do a better job of getting more teams in the rotation more often. Really looking forward to it, looking forward to seeing the atmosphere. I don't think this game is going to be particularly close, though. I think the line is now down to 14.5. It was at 15.5 yesterday.
If it's going to be close, Chad, they need to play Richardson and only play Richardson.
Here, though, is where I think that maybe it will be close. You got two sides of this coin in this game. Alabama right now is all passing game, and their passing game is enough to destroy anyone in America. They've got really good running backs. Their running game, though, has been very blah so far this season. So I don't think Florida has to put a specific interest into the running game and stopping it. So defensively, Florida's got some guys that could do some things against Alabama's passing attack. So maybe they slow them down a little bit that way. But on the flip side of it, Florida's got the second best rushing attack in America, and they're not great passing the ball. So for Alabama, who has, by the way, this is scary to think about, but maybe the best Alabama defense top to bottom since 2016. So the last 5 years, this is a very good Alabama defense. Their whole emphasis is on stacking it up and making sure either Richardson or Jones can't get out and get going in the open field, running from the quarterback position.
Miami and Mercer are who Alabama has played so far. So let's just put this in perspective as I go through some of Bryce Young's stats. Florida needs to blitz and blitz often against him. Can they rattle Young early in this game in the first half and get into the third quarter where you've got it within a score? 57% completion percentage against the blitz. And while you can say, okay, that's not terrible, that's 11th in the SEC currently against the blitz. So that's Bryce Young right now. He's also 1 of 10 on throws beyond 20 yards or more. He's only completed one pass where the ball's over 20 yards in the air. So it's a lot of catch and run. Can they force the deep ball from Young and make some plays and get some takeaways? That is crucial for the Alabama quarterback, who's been good. He has 7 touchdown passes, no interceptions, but it's not like they're hitting the massive plays. They are very efficient. Can Florida rattle him? That's option one. And then option two to stay in the game, to me, is playing Richardson.
Do we expect both quarterbacks?
And Florida?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mullen has said that.
And does it totally tell what they're doing when they're on the field? Richardson,
no,
more
because
of a runner?
they're both dual threat guys. I mean, both. I would even say right now both would prefer to run before pass as a quarterback. So I think they're both very similar.
Yeah.
Richardson is the better overall athlete. Emory Jones has more experience. I mean, I really think it's as simple as that, breaking it down. Hutton, you mentioned that 1 for 7 with passes over 20 yards in the air.
1 for 10.
1 for 10 now. Just looking at the Miami game, because I really don't take much at all
right,
against
right.
Mercer, even though they were 55-point favorites and won by 34, which I know has Alabama fans up in arms. I've listened to 2 different podcasts getting ready for this game.
Yeah.
One from an Alabama perspective, one from a Florida perspective. And the Alabama, I mean, it is amazing what people who cover Alabama now have to get furious about. Like, they are so concerned with penalties and a 34-point win over Mercer that it's just, these kids think they've, you know, they just put on that Alabama helmet and that's good enough to win. Well, I'm here to tell them Coach Saban's right, and there's no way they can just put on that helmet, roll out, and win games. They got a lot of waking up, and I'm thinking, you're going to be fine, and you're fine against Mercer also. But that Miami game specifically, the Bill O'Brien influence on this offense, and we've seen it a lot with Alabama in recent years, 28% of their plays in that game were either bubble screens or RPOs. So more than a quarter of their offense is very much the quick mm-hmm. passing game. Quick strike, quick attack, throwing it out quickly. So the percentages deep down the field and taking shots, not good right now for Bryce Young, but they've been very effective with that screen game.
It is amazing how quickly they reload. It doesn't take them half the season to figure out who their guys are. They just replace. They've had 4 first-round wide receivers selected in the last 2 drafts. They had 6 first-round players selected last year, 8 in the top 2 rounds. No other team had more than 2. I mean, and yet it is just a wave of talent year after year. 2020, they had 4 first-rounders, 7 in the top 2 rounds. 2019, 3 in the first, 4 players selected in the second. 2018, 4 first-rounders. 2017, 4 first-rounders, 3 in the second. I mean, it's just talent after talent after talent, year after year, where they're upset if they're not winning by 55 over Mercer. Imagine what they're taking for granted here, where they have 5-star after 5-star replacing these guys, and it's just it's a developmental team for NFL. It is NFL U.
I can't even imagine what it's like to be an Alabama fan right now. Like, I can't even comprehend it. I'm listening to these things. I can't comprehend being nervous because your team won by 34 points against someone and being upset about that. But that's where Alabama is right now.
I wonder if Alabama-Florida is the top game for Chad Withrow's top 5 games of the week in college football. He'll unveil those next, and then Bobby Carpenter joins us in 20 minutes on Outkick 360. Hey, it's Jonathan Hutton. Thanks for listening to Outkick 360. Be sure to subscribe to the show to have the latest podcast delivered to you each and every day. And give us 5 stars. It helps us grow our network and provide you with more great podcasts like this one.